by you guys, right? So I want to look at something still from last week's Parsha. A vort that my friend brought, and he quotes Rabbi Rav Palm as well. When I was in university, I took two courses in Hebrew. One was introduction to Bible, etc., Mishnah, Medrash, what anyway. It was probably on a Talmud Torah grade 4 level. Anyway, but it was interesting. I remember that the first passage of Chumash that we saw was the one that Yaakov begins to talk to his sons about going to Mitzrayim, and he uses the verb Lama Tisra'u, which, if you look at it, it's a long form of looking, but he says, why are you guys looking at each other as if to say, oh, you know, nobody's moving, we're just sort of looking at one another. And Yaakov says to his sons, I want to tell you something. Yes, we ourselves are okay. And one of the Midrashim, or one of the Beforshim say, Yaakov and his sons could have withstood the famine without going to Mitzrayim. Whatever provisions they had, they could have made it. However, Yaakov was very concerned that the people around him, the other nations, probably families of Esav and Yishmael, who were in fact starving, shouldn't look at Yaakov and his sons and say, hey, those guys are untouched by famine. Because it wouldn't lead them to say, oh, yeah, that's God's protection. It would lead them rather to rampant anti-Semitism, saying, why are these guys entitled? You know, this is unfair, etc. So Yaakov said, I want you to go to Mitzrayim and buy grain to show that we too are subject to the general conditions in the environment here. It says also that at some state, right? Yaakov was saying, don't flaunt the fact that it's okay. And somewhere else it says, they were given a commandment, Lech Litzafoin, go to the north. And Safoin is akin to the word Safun, which is a word we use for Afikoman because we hide the Afikoman. And the idea is, again, make your mannerisms in a hidden feature. Do not basically show how magnanimous HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to you and make others jealous. And I heard this word in the name of Rav Palm, and Mendy Mirashnik said, Rav Yaakov said it also, that in reference to Hanukkah, he says, people who have very nice homes, when they pick up their curtain and they show their menorahs, they should basically minimize the time and then cover up again. The last thing you want to do, Rav Palm said, is show the goyim your beautiful brake front laden with silver, your marble floors, your 16-ton chandelier. That's not what Jews should be known for, and that's what the goyim will see. Rather, our job is Hasnei Leleches and Hashem, to act modestly, not to basically be a show-off. The end of last week's Parsha, Yosef manufactured the condition that Binyamin be found as, quote, a alleged thief for stealing his magic cup. Binyamin was in on the ruse. He knew that this was Yosef because Yosef had indicated to him. But Yosef now wanted to test the other 10 brothers. Would they ever stand up for a child coming from Rachel? And Yosef said to the brothers, I don't want to burden 10 of you. I want Binyamin as my slave. He's a thief. He's of no value to him. Go back and live in peace in Canaan without him. And Yehuda comes forward and he says, do you think there could possibly be peace in our father's home if we do not bring Binyamin? And it says, Vayigash, he came close, and we're told he had three methodologies whereby he would save Binyamin. One, he would daven to the Rabbona Shalom. Two, he would attempt to appease Yosef, if that could be more effective. And if not, he would basically tell his brothers, we got to destroy Mitzrayim. Yehuda was prepared to give up his own life because he had promised Yaakov Avinu that he was forgiving, he was giving up Olam Haba as well if he didn't bring him home. And he said, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu will see that I'm willing to give up my yoif for Binyamin, right? And I'll get a kapora for what I failed to do in failing to save Yosef back when at the pit. Yehuda screamed, and it says his voice was so strong it reverberated for 400 parsa. It says Hushim, the son of Dan, was in Eretz Canaan, and he somehow felt that his uncle Yehuda was in trouble, and it says he rushed, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought him to the palace instantaneously. There was Kvitzas Aderech. The earth contracted because he wanted to do a mitzvah of saving Yehuda. It says, Yehuda and Hushim alone were two impregnable forces. It says, it looked like the owl, rather, that the lion and the hyena, the primal ones, were about to take revenge. When the brothers saw Yehuda's anger, they too, it said, basically flared up. And they kicked the ground, and they basically dislodged mounds and mounds of earth. Yosef began to realize how dangerous the situation is. And he said, oh boy, maybe I've gone too far. Yehuda's basically going to undo me as well. Some say you could see blood dripping in Yehuda's eyes. Others say that the hair on his chest became stiff and stuck out like a bunch of nails, iron, etc. He could take iron bars in his mouth and grind them. Yehuda lifted up a stone weighing 400 shekel, which apparently was tremendous, and he played catch, threw it up in his right hand, caught it in his left. But Yosef wanted to show that he didn't lack strength either. And it said he kicked the marble pillar on the base of his own throne and he destroyed it into basically sawdust. Yehuda wanted to take out his sword, but he couldn't loosen it. And you can see what level Yehuda was on. I can't take it out. This man has Tzidkis on his side. This is not some Egyptian viceroy. He says, he has Siyata Dishmaya. At this stage, Yehuda said, okay, let's put away the war aspect. And he began to attempt to appease him. He said, I offered all of us to become your slaves. Why have you only asked for Binyamin? If you need an older, stronger slave, Reuven is older. I am stronger. The only reason you would pick Binyamin, the youngest, is that you've got ulterior motives. It doesn't make sense logically. I am telling you, Binyamin is innocent. We've been accused falsely. We brought back the money that we found in our sacks that you said God gave us. He says, please, if you think you're going to keep Binyamin, be aware that God will punish you. Binyamin's grandmother, Sarah, was kept by Paro one night, and as a result, the king and his whole household suffered a plague. Binyamin's mother died because of an inadvertent curse his father said. If you try to keep him and Yaakov ends up cursing you, it's over, guy. And have you ever heard the story of Reuven and Shimon taking on Shechem and the two of them destroying it? We've got 10 brothers here, 5 times the army. What do you think we will do to save Binyamin? He said, you said to me, Es Elokim ani yorei, I fear the true God. You don't appear to be that way. You appear like Paro. Paro makes perverted laws to suit his purposes. And now you intend to have an unjust regulation to accuse someone innocent, to frame them. If Binyamin stole your silver cup, nowhere in law does it say he can be a slave. Under Torah law, we'll pay kafel, double that a thief must. By Egyptian law, you take from a thief that which he stole, but you don't enslave the person. As Yehuda made his logical, well-founded arguments, the brothers stood by. It says, they had the feeling that you had two equals. You had this Egyptian monarch in front of them, and you have Yehuda, the king of the Jews. They said, this is a regal battle. It's between two royals. We who maintain the status of being commoners vis-a-vis kings, we're not going to intercede. Chazal tell us that Yehuda is called a lion and Yosef an ox. And it says, only the lion can overcome the ox. Yehuda then threatened, and he said, turning to his brothers, if I draw my sword, I will begin with you, Viceroy, and I will end up killing Paro. He thought that Yosef could not understand because he said this in Hebrew, but Menashe was there who spoke Hebrew. And he said to Yosef, let's go back. Let's talk about the history. You said, do we have a father or brother? What did you want to know for? Were you trying to marry our sister? Or are we trying to marry one of your daughters? What's going on here? We were polite, but whatever you did was totally illogical. Why would you pick us and ask us all these questions? And he said, you know my father has already lost one child, Yosef. Right? And why do you want him to lose the only other child from his that wife? Yosef said that, rather Yehuda said Yosef had died because he was afraid that if they said he hadn't died, they would end up with the same command. Well, bring your brother here. And he said, I want to tell you something. My father Yaakov was reluctant to send Binyamin because his mother died on a journey. His brother Yosef perished on a journey. And it seems that Yaakov felt journeys were particularly dangerous to this part of the family. He did not want to send the child, but he did it to save Shimon. You cannot keep him because it is like you are killing off that branch of the family. If, God forbid, I were to return to my father, he would die on the spot without Binyamin. When Yosef began and he heard Yehuda talk about the anguish of his father, it says he couldn't, it was coming too hard to bear, and he sat down. And he said, okay, Yehuda, I want to hear from the other brothers. And he said, no. Yehuda said, I am the one who pledged my being in this world and in the future world. He says, I can't return without Binyamin. And Yosef said, but your other brother didn't die. And he wasn't a thief, and he didn't harm you, and yet somehow you managed to separate him far from his father. Didn't you tell your father that he was ripped up by an animal? So tell your father that the rope followed the pail, that Binyamin fell the same way Yosef did. Obviously, your premonition was true. Why is it now you're so considerate of your father, but when you did away with your other brother, you didn't have the same emotions? At this stage, Yehuda began to scream and cry. And he says, I cannot return without Binyamin. He says, I will swear in the name of my father, in the name of the Almighty. You give oaths in the name of Paro, a false human being. Whose oath is superior? I will draw my sword, and you've basically signed the death warrant of Egypt. And Yosef said, I can deal with you. I'm strong enough. I'll take your sword and tie it on your neck. And says, Yehuda said, I'll swallow you. And he says, no, you won't. I'll be a stone. I'll bust your teeth. And again, they go into this type of repetitive argument. And Yehuda says, you're a liar. You manufactured this whole event. And he says, but you guys were no better when you dealt with your first brother. And they said, the same fire and anger that we demonstrated against Shechem is now burning within us. We're going to do to you what we did to Shechem. And it says, now Yehuda's rage was at a climax. And he says, okay, I'm getting to the stage where it's kill or be killed. And he says to Naphtali, run, you're swift as a deer. Let's calculate how many separate districts there are in Mitzrayim. He said, 12. Yehuda says, I'll take on 3 on my own, and each one of my other brothers will have 9. It says, Yosef asked Paro immediately to send 3 of his strongest soldiers. They came in, and Yehuda screamed that they fell, and animals began miscarrying. Yosef fell off his throne, and so did Paro. And eventually the teeth of the 300 henchmen basically fell out, it says. And they scooted out. This was it. Yosef knew the moment was at a stage that he either end the charade or end Mitzrayim. Okay, we're going to stop here and we're going to pick up tomorrow.